Hi, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia on Wednesday, the 28th of July, 2010. Well, there's been a whole week load of pretty different and distracting news that's come through from the constantly changing machinations of the political parties over the election here in Australia to the massive media attention kind of media circus, some might say, around the release of WikiLeaks, from WikiLeaks of documents from the Afghanistan war. And here on the home front in Sydney, I've got one top story that I must bring to you to start the night in relation to the vaccine controversy and the ongoing attacks on vaccine activists, which I'll be bringing to you shortly. And later on in the show, we'll be doing a film review and we'll be going through all of the top stories from our Twitter stream. So please stand by. Anti-vaccine group, a threat. I have a story here from Sydney Morning Herald published today, July 27, 2010. Actually, that was yesterday, July 27, 2010. When their four-week-old baby daughter, Dana, died from whooping cough, Tony and David McCafferty sought love and healing to ease their grief. Instead, they were subjected to a campaign of harassment and abuse at the hands of anti-vaccination campaigners, a group who were yesterday labelled a serious threat to the public health and safety of Australia. The Healthcare Complaints Commission issued a public warning against the Australian Vaccination Network after it refused to display a disclaimer on its website to inform readers its information should not be taken as medical advice. Earlier this month, the Commission investigated the network, run out of Bangalore on the north coast by Merrill Dory, and found its website presented incorrect and misleading information that was solely anti-vaccination and quoted selectively from research suggesting that vaccination may be dangerous. Now, we covered this this controversy extensively a couple of weeks ago, and I had Bronwyn Hancock, vaccine campaigner from Sydney, on the show, and I've also been in touch with Merrill Dory, and I do hope to get her on the show soon. This article, I've been told, was put on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald. So the attack on Merrill is really stepping up here. And as it says here, you know, they've basically demanded that she put disclaimers on the site, and they've also criticized her because her site basically has a certain point of view and doesn't present the other side of the story. And she pointed out quite fairly, I think, that, well, you know, the health authorities don't present the other side of the point of view either. They don't on their websites tell you about all of the problems with vaccines. They don't tell you about the many well documented problems with vaccines and the fact that there are actually many people, including healthcare professionals, who are skeptical of many vaccines. And of course, they don't tell you about the problems with the specific known ingredients in vaccines, such as adjuvants, such as squalene, and preservatives such as mercury, and of course aluminium, and these substances, and many other toxic substances and viral material, which is in the vaccines. Of course, it would be sensible, and one would expect normal for the medical authorities to put this information fairly prominently where, you know, parents and patients can see it so that we could all make up our own mind. But no, they have this this approach that we all must be vaccinated for the greater good. again, you know, something we've covered on this show many times, and it's part of this campaign for the greater good, is that they can't allow too much independent thought, because the belief is that you have to have the greatest number of vaccinated people in order to get the benefit. And of course, in doing so, and in following that methodology and that philosophy, they're quite happy to sacrifice an unknown number of individuals who have an allergic reaction, who basically can't tolerate the vaccine, and they basically go out of their way to suppress the information pertaining to these people who have actually been injured by the vaccines. And we saw what happened to Andrew Wakefield. A man had his medical license stripped from him because of his research into the connections between autism and the MMR vaccine. And this is a man who was actually pro-vaccine from a you know, medical scientific point of view. He merely wanted to help these children, and he wanted the medical authorities to take responsibility for the mistakes and the exceptions, you know, that basically were hurting people and in many cases, you know, destroying lives. And you know, he was told to keep quiet about it. He started researching it. His money was taken away from him. They warned him. He kept going. He eventually published his papers, but then many years later his papers were retracted from The Lancet, which had originally published them, and then he was stripped of his medical license to practice medicine. So this is the kind of treatment that doctors get. Now, Meryl Dorey is an independent activist. She's not a medical professional, and she actually doesn't come within the scope of the Healthcare Complaints Commission, because she's not actually practicing or setting herself up as a healthcare provider. She is basically a citizen of a purportedly, you know, free country, who has an opinion. And now we're seeing with this stepped up attack against her, and we're seeing in the Sydney Morning Herald now, clearly the media is being co-opted here to bring in the big guns. And we'll keep following this story. We will be getting Meryl Dorey on the show. And it's now time for all freedom-loving people to come together on this issue and support what Meryl is doing and support the anti-vaccine movements. And when I say anti-vaccine, I really am talking about those movements who have looked at vaccines and decided that these are dangerous. And we should support them in to the extent that we believe that they have valid information. Of course, if you don't think they're correct, don't support them. But for those of us who recognize it, I really want to reach out here to doctors and nurses and people who are in the healthcare professions, because many of them keep quiet about this. And, you know, they just they don't vaccinate themselves, they don't vaccinate their children, but they'll vaccinate their patients. Well, that approach has to end. And we're going to try to spearhead a movement where we really put pressure on people who are in those professions to come out, to step out, and join with the movement of freedom, which basically has to triumph. Otherwise, the control grid and the restrictions on what we can do will only become more extreme in the guise of, you know, public health safety measures. We'll find one day that that vaccines become compulsory, and you know, you may find at the moment it's actually not compulsory, yet there are so many blocks to people who are not vaccinated that it's almost as if it is. But still, you do have the right to say no, and that's very important. But we need to maintain that, and we need to roll back the pressure of fascist kind of groupthink, which has been imposed on our society over this and many other related issues. Okay, I want to turn now to the developments over the WikiLeaks release of 90,000 odd documents from the Afghan war, which has been really dominating, just really blasting forth on all of the news channels, radio, television, newspapers. And it comes at a very interesting point in time, and there's a number of things that we need to look at in regard to WikiLeaks. Because with this latest development, what has been clear is that the information that has been released, firstly, it's all in digital format. None of it is actually like real documents or even scans of physical documents, which makes it a lot easier for the information to possibly be forged. It's very hard to prove its authenticity. The other point being that it's actually most of it fairly soft information, in that it's, yes, it's shocking, but it's only shocking to the degree that most of what we already knew was shocking, and it doesn't actually tell us anything vitally new. It merely confirms what we knew, and many reports of attacks and drone attacks and missile attacks in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So in terms of alerting the world to, you know, some new information about atrocities that could change the course of the war, I don't particularly see that happening. But there is other information in this WikiLeaks information which has actually been seized upon by the media, and it was actually a leading story on the BBC, that there's information in here which says that the Pakistani government is actually funding and supporting and colluding with the Taliban in Afghanistan. And this is actually being interpreted by the Pakistan government as a propaganda effort. And that was actually said in an interview on the BBC a couple of nights ago. And many alternative news blog commentators are now having a bit of a rethink about WikiLeaks. It's not that we're totally changing our view, but this actually comes in the wake of some comments that that were quoted from an Irish newspaper, in which WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange had said that he thought that the 9/11 conspiracies were false conspiracies, and he actually said in this quote that he was constantly annoyed by people who carry on about false conspiracies such as 9/11, when there are a lot of other real conspiracies out there that we could be looking at. And of course, many people in the 9/11 truth movement around the world had looked hopefully to WikiLeaks, because we assumed that that Julian Assange and that group would be instinctively on our side, even if they weren't able to come out publicly, because they don't really have the solid information. We, of course, all would accept that. But when we hear a prominent person in a position that has actually quite a lot of influence now making a statement like that, which is actually quite ill-considered, in a sense it's a throwaway line, but it comes with a sense of authority of someone who's actually right in there with all of the dirty secrets of the world. And if he says, well, the 9/11 conspiracies are all false, then a lot of people are going to be turned off. And of course, we know that the official conspiracy of 9/11 is false. We know that. We know that there's a wealth of information which shows that explosives were used in the collapse of the towers. We've had revelations from people of really serious collusion between the hijackers and the FBI, which of course came from Sybil Edmonds, a very important whistleblower on 9/11. We've had dozens of top level government people around the world who've basically called out that there is a serious problem here. We have 1,200 architects and engineers, of course, in the movement for 9/11 truth. And when someone with the implied authority of Mr. Assange says this, we really do have to take it as a serious problem. And there's been a lot of discussion of that on couple of sites, 911blogger.com in particular. And of course, this release of information from Afghanistan came just a couple of days after that. And interestingly, it also came after a massive predator drone attack on Pakistan on the weekend, which killed 35 people. And it appears that the main thrust of the information from the WikiLeaks reporter, or at least the way it's being portrayed in the media, is that there is evidence for the Pakistanis to be supporting the Taliban. Therefore, it's actually, in a sense, pro-war information. You know, we need to be there. There's serious threat here that we have to deal with, and it's not our fault, sort of thing. And there's also information in the WikiLeaks documents that Osama bin Laden has been spotted, again perpetuating the myth of Osama bin Laden, when all the information that's reliable, that's solid, that's come out over the years suggests that he's already dead. Benazir Bhutto said he was already dead. And, of course, the video confessions of Osama bin Laden have been, you know, quite clearly shown to be fake. So we do have to look at this with a degree of caution. And I'm going to actually play you a clip here that was an interview with Russia Today speaking to Alex Jones about this whole affair.
Our top story, it's leaking the truth as the Pentagon knows it, all over the news, opening up fresh debate and reviving questions we have been asking here on RT for a while. If the war is lost, why does the U.S. continue to push forward? And with the release of the WikiLeaks documents, what is the role of the mainstream media in war reporting and groundbreaking investigations? We're joined by radio talk show host and political commentator Alex Jones. He's coming to us live from Austin, Texas. Hey there, Alex. Now, let's start with the mainstream media. When the WikiLeaks WikiLeaks released the dates and history of the Bilderberg Group meetings, which was this powerful group of military professionals and executives meeting in certain areas, the mainstream media didn't pay much attention to it. And for the most part, when this WikiLeaks document thing broke, they didn't pay much attention to Julian Assange. Now he's all over the mainstream media. So what exactly is going on here, and why was the mainstream media discrediting WikiLeaks before?
Well, that's a complex issue, and thank you for having me. But a lot of things are happening here. I don't think the people at WikiLeaks themselves are bad individuals. I think they mean well, but clearly they're being used here. It's admitted that the New York Times went to Obama last week when they were given these documents and asked the White House what they should do with them. And out of the 92,000 plus documents that have been released, we notice they're cherry picking these. And most of these are battlefield reports. They're not really top secret. They're just secret. Intelligence agencies the world over use fake intelligence that they leak on purpose to really push their propaganda. And we hear that, Pakistan is funding Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Well, who funds Pakistani ISI? It's the U.S. government, the Mossad, and British intelligence. And then we hear that bin Laden is alive and is over there. So that keeps that myth going. And so we're seeing a lot of the stuff that the media is focusing on in these documents is really aiding the military-industrial complex in their goal of continuing this war. Much of what was in these documents we already know about: the massacres, the mass killings, the drone attacks, and things like that. And this is the first time that WikiLeaks released this to the mainstream media, Der Spiegel, London Guardian, New York Times first, instead of releasing it to the general public. So the mainstream media was able to put the spin,
you know, Alex,
on the information.
I want to ask you about that, actually, because as you mentioned, you know, WikiLeaks had to release this information, not the mainstream media. Were we once depended on the media during the Vietnam War?
I'm just going to pause it there. It's worth having a listen to that. And I want to actually just also play a little clip from an interview that was also on the Alex Jones show. That was like one take on the whole situation. There's an interview here which I think casts a little bit more of a darker light on what is actually going on here. A darker light, that's an odd phrase. Anyway, it sheds some darkness onto the possible goings on here with WikiLeaks. So just stand by. This is an interview with John Young on Prison Planet.
I don't know what to think of this, and it'll take a time to really burrow down into it. But joining us is John Young, kind of the proto-WikiLeaks that's been around for more than a decade and was one of the guys that helped found with the Electronic Frontiers Foundation and many other organizations. So we know John's a good guy. And, John, give us your take on this big story.
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that we don't know if these files, and they are digital files. These are not documents. These are not paper documents. They're only digital files. We don't know if they're authentic or not. What we have three versions in major newspapers and one version on WikiLeaks, and these are only digital versions. And apparently the files are made in the field on computers and sent in to headquarters. And the problem, and so I'll just say, is first of all, when they say it's the biggest dump of military documents, these are not documents, these are digital files. And the reason I emphasize that is that digital files are notoriously easy to manipulate, forge, change, and doctor. And so, and none of these three newspaper sites or WikiLeaks provides the original files. They only provide doctored and packaged versions. And so WikiLeaks has been known to put up original documents, as does my site. But these are not original documents, and they're only digital files. So that has not been pointed out, how easy it is to manipulate digital files. And many of the world's intelligence services are dumping huge amounts of digital files onto the Internet right now. And so we don't know for sure whether this is a major revelation or not, or WikiLeaks has been snookered, or if these newspapers have been snookered, and it hasn't been talked about, actually. Now, I say this because WikiLeaks in the past has used digital signatures on every one of their documents to prove authentication. This is the first time they've not done that.
Okay, I'm just going to pause it there. I'm also going to play you a little clip from the interview with Wayne Madsen now, which actually gets into some of the potential problems with WikiLeaks. So just stand by and we'll bring that to you.
Well, Alex, what I've seen with the what they're reporting, these 90,000 documents are, they're, the highest classification is secret. Now, we know that the intelligence community is over-classifying things. So really, what do we have here? Do we have anything that's really earth-shattering, or do we have something that probably could be found on the front page of any daily newspaper? We know that from these leaked documents that there's a mess in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Well, we already knew that. We knew that from Ambassador Carl Leichenberry's cables back to Washington, to the State Department, that stated that, you know, backing this guy Hamid Karzai is a total disaster. So what do we know that's new? What we have here are three newspapers selected for these leaks: the New York Times, the Guardian in the UK, and Der Spiegel in Germany. And I think all three are problematic when it comes to leaks.
Because these are well-known papers that work like hand in glove with intelligence.
Absolutely, and we know that Der Spiegel, for example, is pushing for the war against Iran. They supported the United States in the Russian war in South Ossetia against Georgia. We know that The Guardian has some links to George Soros. We know that Soros and his friends like Cass Sunstein are big promoters of WikiLeaks.
Which is bizarre, because we've got Sunstein saying censor the Internet. This looks like it could be their excuse, but that's what I noticed yesterday and today reading these articles, is notice they're saying, oh, look, it shows that Pakistan's helping the Taliban, right as the West wants to go into Pakistan and admits we have special forces on the ground. So it's very suspicious. Wayne Madsen, stay there. Let's come back.
Okay, there's enough there to give you a taste of where that story is headed, and we'll post those YouTube links so you can listen to the whole show there. It was some very interesting coverage there from the Alex Jones Show, and this is something that that I've been onto from the beginning here. I've actually posted an article which is currently up at 911 Blogger along the same lines as what was being discussed there, because I could see as soon as this WikiLeaks release came out, within 12 hours, it was being spun to support the war effort, and they're focusing in on these things like the Pakistani support of the Taliban And leading with that is an actual headline in the actual headlines of the world news on the World Today on the BBC. So that that should highlight for you the degree to which this information it can be used and is being used perhaps against the very intentions of the people who are releasing it. So it's a very important development. Okay, our next story from the Sydney Morning Herald. No minister, 90% of WebSnoop document censored to stop premature, unnecessary debate. The federal government has censored approximately 90% of a secret document outlining its controversial plans to snoop on Australia's web surfing. Obtained under a Freedom of Information Act, out of fear the document could cause premature, unnecessary debate. Gee, it sounds almost like a medical condition, doesn't it? You're suffering from premature, unnecessary debate. Here, take... Yes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, just some background on this story. The government has been consulting with the internet industry over the proposal, which would require ISPs to store certain internet activities of all Australians, regardless of whether they have been suspected of wrongdoing. And this is actually for law enforcement agencies to access. All parties to the consultations have been sworn to secrecy. And of course, under Freedom of Information, it's possible to get these documents from the government. But of course, in this case, the government gave them a document that was all blacked out. And I've got actually quite a good clip here from mainstream television from the morning show, I think on Channel 7. And we'll just play that for you in a moment, if I can find it here. Here we go. We'll just kick this off.
Well, still at home, and censored government documents outlining controversial plans to spy on unsuspecting internet users have been revealed. Top-level government officials have been in talks with the internet industry over a proposal to log and store the web activities of every Australian, even if you're not suspected of committing a crime. Then the data will be made available to law enforcement agencies around the country.
Now, the government had intended to keep this plan under wraps. However, the largely censored documents were obtained under the Freedom of Information laws, with 90% of the detail crossed out with a thick black marker. So what exactly are they hiding?
For more on this, we're joined by tech expert and managing editor of gizmodo.com.au, Seamus Byrne, and in Melbourne, online privacy expert Colm Jacobs from Electronic Frontiers Australia. Good morning to you both.
Morning. Morning.
Seamus, why would the government want this information? It seems a lot of information to be collecting on every single Australian and their internet activity.
Yeah, I mean, their argument is that this would be similar to laws that are already in place in Europe and that this is based on being able to combat terrorist activity, and that's sort of how it came to be in Europe. But I think one of the issues attached to that that basic idea is that, of course, if you throw more hay on the haystack, then maybe it starts to get harder to find those needles.
Seamus, exactly what kind of data would they be interested in keeping?
This is the big question, of course, and this is why the Sydney Morning Herald kind of put out that Freedom of Information request to try to find that detail. And this is what's happened, is that we've not been told. Now, if we look at the European laws that are in place, they're sort of more based around, you know, when people have been accessing the internet, things like that. But some of the industry insiders here have actually been suggesting that that they were asking for a lot more. They're asking for what is ultimately web browsing history. Now, while the government has denied that that's what they're asking for, it's ultimately a technicality that they're arguing, because if they're looking for like IP addresses, which basically means you can still find out exactly what websites people have been going to.
All right, Colin, what are your concerns with the government storing this kind of data?
Well, there are huge privacy concerns for a start. I mean, all of us use the internet for everything from negotiating sensitive business deals to sending intimate messages to loved ones. If the government really is on this fishing expedition to collect as much information as possible about our communications, we're going to end up with every internet service provider in the country having a huge database of information about everything we've done, and as we've just heard, potentially including the websites we've visited. Once this database exists, there are obviously huge concerns about who might have access to it, when and under what circumstances the government might look at it, and what might happen if it somehow leaks out into the wider world. So the privacy issues are very worrying, as well as the secretive nature about which the government has gone about this.
It sounds very Cold War-ish, doesn't it? Is it even legal to spy on web users?
Well, actually, there are very tough laws in this country controlling what you can do with other people's communications. In fact, the government may have fallen afoul of these laws just recently itself when it conducted trials of internet censorship because that involved interfering in people's internet connections.
Okay, we'll just leave it there. We're going to take a break now and we'll come back to discuss this story in more depth. We'll have some music and we'll have Josh Jackson for the second half of the show. Please stand by. This is A Change Is Gonna Come from the album Playing for Change.
father looked at me, balled his fist up and swung at me. It's a good thing I ducked.
With all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia, and welcome back, Josh Jackson. Josh, how's your week been?
G'day, folks. G'day, Harold. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, good. Just, you know, I don't have much time these days. I've got so much going on. I'm getting so many emails and so much interest in the show, actually, which is really good. But it's actually giving me more to do, which, you know, it's the problem as this show starts to get more and more kind of known, that's going to be an increasing problem. But it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's one of the last shows left in Australia that I know of that actually talks about the real issues at hand and uncovers some, and sort of reads between the lines of it, you know? A lot of the mainstream news, they just basically parrot what they see on the Reuters feeds, and they don't really, you know, they don't really dissect it.
Indeed. I mean, you know, in a way, if you look at the stuff that's really dominating the news at the moment, which is the WikiLeaks issues, I mean, this is all the type of stuff. And, you know, I think what this really highlights is that this kind of information about secrets that are suppressed is of great importance and interest to the whole world. It's not just a little in group of conspiracy theorists, if you know what I mean. It's globally one of the most important kind of themes at the moment. And I think it's the alternative news and the bloggers who are leading the world in bringing this type of information to people's attention.
Well, look, I mean, just to talk about that WikiLeaks thing, my take on it, it's ridiculous for people to go, ooh, wow, gee, surprise, surprise, the government's been lying to us, or governments around the world have been lying to us about the Afghan war and the wars that we've been. Ooh. I mean, what do people expect, honestly? What do they expect? You know, they lied to us about the reasons for going into Iraq, majorly. And second, well, let's dissect that for a second. They told us that it was for weapons of mass destruction. Now, they just extrapolated took the information they got from their intelligence sources and just blew it out of all proportion, threw it all over every news, went to the UN, really grabbed anything. Now, the US military is giving WikiLeaks the finger, saying, oh, well, they don't cross, you know, it takes a lot. You can't just put articles up. You have to do a cross-referencing and multiple cross-referencing of references and to find out where intelligence actually... And you're thinking, what, you're giving WikiLeaks a talking to about how to deal with intelligence. I mean, you haven't got the best record in the world there, guys.
Well, yes, I mean, there's a lot of contradictory information actually coming out in relation to the WikiLeaks release, and a lot of it does actually cast some doubt on what the agendas are here, and I've been covering that in the show, so it's a difficult topic to engage with. I just want to quickly move on to this question of the Australian government actually monitoring our web activity, because, again, this really affects... that our ability to as free citizens basically pursuing our interests. I mean, a web session with a browser is a private activity, just like a conversation with a person that you might have at a cafe or someone on the phone. Now, the government is actually moving to bring in a system that will track everything you do, all your web browser sessions. And I was just, before you came on, was reading from an article here from Fairfax. And there's another short clip I'm just going to play here, which is from the Fairfax article. So I'll just kick this off and then we can have a little discussion on it. So just stand by.
This is the government's controversial plan to gather information on Australia's web surfing. Can't see all that much? That's because these documents were obtained by Fairfax under the restrictions of the Freedom of Information laws that allow the government to decide what is deemed in the public interest. And apparently, not a whole lot of this is in the public interest to see. The documents you are looking at contain information from a briefing to the telco industry in March of this year about a government's plan to require internet service providers to store certain internet activities of all Australians.
We only found out about this proposal, if you could call it that, by accident, because some of the internet service providers they were liaising with were very uncomfortable with the proposition as it was put. And now, as a result of this Freedom of Information request, we've got 8 or 9 pages that have been heavily hit with a black pen, and I think the public really is none the wiser. The government just needs to come clean and tell the Australian public what it is that they intend to do.
The blacking out was done by the Attorney General's Department Legal Office.
Well, it's very worrying. It's clear that the government are pushing as hard as they can to get as much data as they can, and they want industry agreement. The document that we got under FOI is so censored that basically all that's left is the page numbers. Now, the government might spin the argument, look, if you've got nothing to hide, if you're not a criminal, you shouldn't worry that this data is being retained. But I would turn the same question back on the Attorney General. If they've got nothing to hide in these negotiations that they're trying to conduct with industry, then why can't the Australian public have a little bit of insight into what's going on?
In a return email to Fairfax, it was said that the massive amount of exemptions were put forward because they would result in adverse consequences and could cause confusion and premature and unnecessary debate.
Yes, folks, premature and unnecessary debate. It's a new medical condition. And, there's a cure for it. It's called fascism. And, what's your take on this, Mr. Jackson?
This is just typical creep. This typical creep, and it creeps me out, honestly. Like, it's at first they come in with a filter, get everyone a bit softened up about that. I've seen headlines like, child porn filter put on hold. I mean, that just says it all. I mean, it's not a child porn filter anyway, but they'll just call it that straight out. And then everyone goes, ooh, well, that's bad, aren't they? That's bad. And then they'll come out with this. It obviously got leaked through an information, a Freedom of Information Act request, but this is where we've always said on this show, this is where it's heading.
It is, and you know, this is a twofold attack on our freedoms. On the one hand, they're bringing in a system that's going to totally invade your privacy, and actually illegally, according to the laws of the land as they stand, because you know there are laws about privacy. Secondly, they're denying us the information about what exactly it is they're going to do.
It's extreme and people, it's very worrying. Honestly, folks, I don't wish to get people worried, but this is an extremely worrying outcome because not only, like you said, Herod, there's a couple of fronts here.
Yes.
Let's look at the Freedom of Information Act request. It comes back all blank. It comes out blacked out. So the people that we're employing to basically protect our freedoms and to protect us from foreign invasion... And that's pretty much what government's for, is now getting into spying on us as a whole and collecting every bit of data there is about us. I mean, if this isn't Orwellian in its most boiled down essence, then I don't know what is. And
I mean, I can't, to be honest with you, I can't see the difference between that and putting microphones in all public spaces where people gather to record their conversations. What is the difference between that? And if that was done, people would go, oh, that's, you know, that's outrageous, you know. But for some reason, but maybe they wouldn't. I mean, maybe we've just reached the point, well, they might actually start doing that next month.
Well, look,
you know, it just seems that whatever seems impossible now, next year they'll be doing it.
I'd just like to put it to the public about this. If there was a company, there was an ISP, and they said, "Hey, we filter out all child porn that we know of. You can use us." I'd say that's not a problem at all. Go for it. If there's a company that says, "Hey, while you're with us, we spy on everything you do."
Yeah.
Are you really going to use them, or are you going to use a competitor that says, "Hey, you know, we're not freaks. We don't, you know, sit there over your shoulder perving on everything you do like freaks."
Yeah.
You know, we give you, you know, your freedoms. Now, are you actually going to use that company? Well, no, you'd go to one of their competitors. So the real thing here is voluntarism again. We are not, in a free society, you should be able to have choice. And there is plenty of choice for filtering out despicable and illegal content, and there's plenty of choice for protecting children in your family. Now, when governments start... Okay, even if the government was to come out and say, "Hey, guess what, we want to spy on everything," I would be shocked and appalled, and we'd definitely be having a conversation about it. It's the fact that they're secretly doing it. Then, when they get busted, they black out the whole lot, and people should be extremely cautious and definitely fire the government for that.
Well, yeah, and just
they should
just
be voting for the Pirate Party or someone.
Indeed, and just in the context of what's going on in our federal politics at the moment, the both parties have really outed themselves as being quite pathetic shadows of each other. I mean, they've at the moment, I don't know if you listen to any of the debates, like the leaders' debate on the weekend, Josh, but I mean, everyone I've spoken to about it basically said it was just the most boring, you know,
well, look, you're
uninteresting...
either voting for the socialist or the fascist, really. I mean, that's, you know, you haven't got really much choice.
And it's all packaged.
Leads to fascism. So, if really, you know, what do you get?
Yes, and it's all packaged. I mean, this debate they had, it looked like a game show. Like they had they were like game show contestants.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they were sitting there, and they had the little worm following what they were saying, and this worm basically responds to the audience's moods.
Yeah, instead of actually the audience asking unfiltered questions,
yeah.
You might get some crazy dude getting up there screaming his eyes off. That's all part of it. These people are going to represent you in this so-called democracy, why don't we actually get to ask them questions instead of some, you know, pre-examined three-panel, totally orchestrated joke that we call a debate? I mean, it's not a debate. It's totally, no words. I'm out of words.
Yeah. Look, I am too. We'll keep our eye on that, and we're going to give you some more political analysis as we get closer to the election. But there's so little good material in there to really analyse. It's obvious that both sides are co-opted.
No tax breaks. There's nothing. It's just promises.
Yeah.
We'll take from you and then give you back a tiny little scrap of what we take from you. I mean, taxes are huge. I just bought I traded in my other cars and paid a little extra and got another car because mine was, you know, getting a bit old. I mean, to basically get it registered, I have to pay an extortion fee of a whole bunch of taxes and duties, and then you have to pay on top of that registration, and then I mean, it's on and on. That's only one tax, and then you have income taxes and fines, and you've got just everywhere I turn are taxes. And then what do? At election times, they sit there giving you these ridiculous bribes, these pathetic bribes that are so just disgusting to me. I just think, I can't believe that people actually fall for this crud.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're just going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with a really quick movie review. And we're going to do it David and Margaret style because Josh and I have both seen this film, and I'm not sure what
are you Margaret or?
I'm not sure what his opinion of it is, but we'll soon find out. I'll be Margaret. Bear with us.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Okay, I'm just going to play a short one-minute clip here from the trailer of the film we're about to review.
What's the most resilient parasite? An idea. Single idea from the human mind can build cities. An idea can transform the world and rewrite all the rules. Which is why I have to steal it.
Never recreate from your memory. Always imagine new places.
He's hiding something, and we need to find out what that is.
We gotta break out of here. Give him the kick!
This was not a part of the plan! Wake me up! Wake me up!
Okay, well, it's a bit... Okay. Okay. It's a bit pointless listening to that without the visuals. But anyway, I'm just going to lead with this because I'm going to take a fairly harsh position on this. To say I was underwhelmed would be like a massive understatement of how I felt about this movie. And, you know...
Are you a bit of a downer?
Well, indeed, I am, and that's my predilection. I'm a harsh critic, and I'll tell you why. I'm only reviewing this movie because it's been highly, you know, talked about. Again, you know, so like some other movies, which I'm going to touch on briefly, but. And I had some tickets given to me, and I ended up going to see it. I wasn't actually planning to, but then I did it. And I just wanted to point out really quickly that, that this film falls into a genre of artificial reality movies, which is sort of the granddaddy of which is actually The Matrix, for which is like more than 10 years old now. And of all the movies that have come out of that genre, the only one that has had any value for me that I would say want to go back and watch again is The Matrix itself, because that movie had actually some ideas in it which have become quite important for real movements of truth and freedom in this world. That movie,
yeah, it was a great parable, wasn't it? It really delved into. It's kind of like 1984. It has references to reality that we can always sort of cross to illustrate what's happening in reality.
Indeed. And look, I mean, I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, although I don't think describing the movie will spoil it. But I mean, it does have that virtue, and you find out that very quickly when you watch the movie anyway. It's not as if that's a big mystery.
No, I mean, that's spelled out straight out. Indeed, that you're going into people's subconscious.
Indeed.
But they say that in the trailer. But, you know, I've found, you know, Christopher Nolan, he's a very good director. I mean, he's done some good stuff in the past, like Memento, which was quite a good...
I was quite impressed by that movie. I thought Memento was a nice little movie, and it was probably a low budget movie. You know, it didn't have anything very special in going on in it, but it had really good acting. Guy Pearce was a superb actor in that movie, and it made you identify with him, right?
Yeah.
I felt identified with Guy Pearce in Memento. I didn't feel any identification with Leonardo DiCaprio, and maybe, you know, it's a combination of scripting and acting, but I really didn't care. That's what
I wish, to be honest, with this film is that, you know, when you delve into someone's subconscious, it starts getting really strange and weird and surreal. And what I found is when you go into this film, you know, you're delving into people's subconscious and then dreams within dreams, and it's just totally action blockbuster. You know, people running around with snowmobiles getting shot, and you're thinking, that's in someone's dream? Like, you know, I mean, when I'm having a dream, it's always walking to, you know, no way.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's crazy stuff, you know, walking to work nude, or you know, I'm late for somewhere, or and all of a sudden you're out on a boat, and then, you know, stuff just flips around everywhere, and it's craziness.
I know,
and
it's
very
interesting,
creative and surreal, and whereas this was just sort of an action film within someone's head, and I was just thinking,
yeah, I mean, there was just endless chase scenes, endless shooting scenes, endless just, you know, shoot 'em ups, basically.
Yeah, and then you have people, you know, like everyone was wearing the same clothes. You didn't know who was the baddies or the goodies. And I got fairly lost, to be honest. I mean, the concepts are what I liked. I liked the concept of delving into someone's dreams and then manipulating that to them when they wake up. They feel, you know, that sort of stuff's quite interesting, and I think, you know, thought manipulation is definitely a part of what advertising's all about and media.
Yeah, there was one interesting idea in it, which is that you might be able to plant the seed of an idea in someone's mind.
But it's
well known.
It's a very well formulated idea.
Yeah,
it's been around for years. I mean, you know, if you've seen any of Darren Brown's stuff, he's a lot of NLP, and stuff. You can definitely do that. I mean, advertising's based around that concept.
Of course, delving into your subconscious, putting an idea in there, making you want something. Yeah, of course.
So every time you feel thirsty and you're at the deli, the next time you think of you know, a certain cola drink. So,
What I think is interesting, Josh? There's been three films this year that have been quite big. Avatar, Shutter Island, which had Leonardo DiCaprio in it also, and this movie. And each one of these movies actually explores virtual reality in a different concept. I mean, Avatar is actually like a highly computerized concept of virtual reality, more or less like the Matrix idea, right?
Where you basically plug in your real life, your brain
plugs into a virtual world where you actually have an extended body in that world. Then, but now in Shutter Island, what it was is actually an exploration of psychosis and hallucination. But of course, that is the most ancient and well kind of understood form of virtual reality, because it's the one that's been around forever. I mean, you can go into a state of psychosis and hallucination and experience things that are real for you but not real for other people. And I actually thought Shutter Island was quite a good movie for its genre. I mean, it wasn't trying to be terribly, you know, intellectual, but it was a thriller, and it had some good visuals. This movie, I'd have to say, well, I mean, I'm really not a big fan of Avatar, so I would actually probably put Avatar further down I'd put it at the bottom. This movie next rung up from Avatar, but
I didn't mind Avatar, but I'm a computer animator by trade.
Indeed. I mean, you would have enjoyed it, and look, I can respect that, and with this movie as well. I mean, there was a lot of interesting effects going on in this movie, and I think a lot of it was actually done with physical sets as well, a lot of actual constructed things that were used, and
So, I mean, you know, this whole concept of virtual reality, a lot of people live that life now. You know, through sport and through television and TV shows. I mean, they were literally, people sit at home watching shows about living life. So, shows about people, you know, going skiing and adventuring and stuff. And they're perfectly fine. They're not people in wheelchairs. These are people that have got savings and got jobs and have got holidays booked up, but they'll just rather sit there and watch these shows in this virtual reality and getting fed to them. And I think there is a really something we have to think about as a society, that we're sort of, especially with the internet, we're sort of getting sucked into this. So I mean, I call the internet beast time. You know, you just get sucked into computer time.
Yeah.
But you just, by the time, you know, you put your head in beast time, and after 7 hours goes by, and you're like, whoa, you know, it's the end of the day. That's crap. I haven't done anything. I've just fumbled with a problem the whole time. You know, like some virus, or I don't know, something's got
trying beast
to
time.
Get something to work, or you know.
You've been engaged in a virtual world that whole time, really, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. And it's a very important part of our lives. I mean, the internet is important to what we do as truth seekers, for sure. But I think, especially for an activist point of view, getting out there and talking to people and actually being seen in reality is quite rare nowadays. A lot of people will get on and they'll send emails and they'll do that sort of stuff, but they, you know, they won't come to actions. And I think that's sad.
Yeah. And as I was saying earlier in the show, I was talking about the latest vaccine stories there with the vaccine group and Meryl Dorey being attacked. I really want to spearhead with this show for us to get out there to talk to people, and you know, with that particular thing, I'm actually really focused on talking to medical people, doctors, because we know that there are a lot of doctors out there who are quietly against vaccines, but they don't talk about it.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
Well, it's embarrassing for them, and you know, sure, they might lose, you know, they could potentially lose their job if they talked about it too much.
Well,
so, but we have to, we've got to move through that. We've got to get way beyond that.
Yeah, I've got I sold a piece of furniture in my old apartment to this girl that lived in my block, and as I was moving it down to her apartment, I said, "Oh, you know, what do you do?" And she said, "I administer vaccines."
Right.
I said, "Oh, well, I'd never get that done." Ugh. And she goes, "Yeah, I don't either. It's funny, I administer them, thousands of them every year, and I wouldn't take them."
Was she a nurse or a...
No, she's just employed by... They go around to companies and to give flu shots.
Oh, my God.
I know, and I said... I mean, I was thinking, God, it's very unvirtuous, you know, to sort of go around giving them to everyone, but, you know, I guess it's a job. And,
it is.
But,
Well, look, we won't... just getting back to the film, we won't bother giving you a star rating, but I just think that the film...
it's a bit of fun, and it stretches your mind a bit, yeah. And I think the concepts are good. I'm sorry if we gave anything away, but, you know, it's nothing that you wouldn't get from a trailer, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't really think there was much to give away in this film. It's not like Memento. Memento did have some stuff that you could, you know, maybe best not to know about if you saw the movie. I'll tell you, actually, I would like to do a review of that film, because that film I thought was quite interesting, because just a couple of things about it. I thought it was really clever the way it was about a man who has no short-term memory, and what they actually did was they kind of filmed the whole movie. Actually, I shouldn't talk about it because you might want to see it. So anyway, yeah, it's interesting what they did. We should. We're gonna have to wrap up.
Yeah, folks. Another week. Give us some news. Check out the Twitter feed as well. And if you want us to cover anything,
yeah,
tweet us.
I'm getting really good Twitter leads actually from some of my listeners. I'm actually getting inundated with really great information. It's just amazing. And keep it up. Like, email me, send me tweets. Get onto Facebook and find Herewood Fenton on Facebook or Truth News on Facebook, and leave comments on our show. And, you know, any important story that you've got, we will tweet it and we will potentially put it on the show as well.
Yeah. Till next week. I'm Josh Jackson.
And I'm Herewood Fenton, wishing you a good night, and we'll be talking to you again very soon.